What's up, everybody? Welcome to Water Break. My name is Ryan Cavan, and I'm here with my co-host, Terrell Thorogood.
What's up, everyone? And like always, we've got another dope episode prepared for you guys. So before you keep listening, hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you're listening to right now. Get ready to relax. Take a water break. All right, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Water Break. I'm your host, Terrell Thorogood, alongside Ryan Cavan.
What accent was that?
I don't know. That was like a, I was kind of like an auctioneer a little bit.
All right, let's get back to the show.
Now back to the show. We got another good one for you. We excited about it? You excited about it?
I am.
I'm not excited about that hat.
Oh. My new Lake Show gear. Champions 2020.
Stop.
All for the Mamba.
I saw they put an asterisk on the side of the hat there.
That was really funny. That was really funny. I've only heard that joke from you like maybe 17 times in the past month, but it's still funny every time you say it.
It's hilarious. Yeah, there's an extra star there on the side of the hat. Daylan, what's good, bro?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, bro. You're good.
It's gonna be a good one.
Oh man, we got another good one.
We do. Excited. As always, we always have a good one.
Yeah,
it's never a bad one.
Yeah, that's all we're trying to do. Just bring you guys good content, some good episodes. You know, send us some ideas in the comments.
Yeah.
What you guys want us to talk about? DM us on Instagram. You know, hit up our socials. Send us an email, waterbreakpod@gmail.com. Let us know if you guys got some topics. We have had some fans DM us some of their topics and ideas already, and we're excited for some new content that we're gonna push out in some new episodes that you guys have suggested to us. So we're excited about that and
giving you an opportunity to have a little bit of a voice.
Yeah,
share a little bit there. So we're grateful that some of our fans would give some topics that they're interested in, have some discussions, and then also some opportunities to maybe bring on some new guests that, you know, kind of are involved in some sports outside of our realm a little bit, which will be cool as well, to allow everyone to have a voice. That's really what the podcast is about. Us just talking sports, having a good time, and then giving people a voice that maybe otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to have a voice in the sports world.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of the voices, we're going to our off-camera voice here. Daylan, you ready to start us off here on the show today?
Yes, let's roll, boys. So we are going to talk about the biggest one-hit wonders. In every sport.
Yeah.
I mean, in certain sports, obviously, that we have, you know, what we've talked about. But biggest one-hit wonders. Let's go with Ryan. Why don't you start us off?
All right, let me start it off. The first one that came to mind, probably the biggest one that I could think of, was Jeremy Lin. Lin's Sanity.
Yeah.
If you remember that. And he had those few games in February 2012. Jeremy Lin was promoted to the starting lineup and led a 7-game winning streak for the New York Knicks. His stellar play during that season helped the Knicks make the 2012 NBA playoffs. And then it kind of turned him into an international superstar, really. He appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Time Magazine, and was named the Time 100. Time 100 is one of the most influential people in the world. And then in July 2012, Lin was won the ESPY Award for Breakthrough Athlete of the Year. I mean, this was the craze of 2012. Like,
yeah.
Literally, I remember even... There were people I knew like having Linsanity shirts. Like, this was so big. And then he signs that right after following that year, he signs that big contract with Houston. And people are like, man, this guy is going to break out and be this star. And I mean, he was still a decent NBA player, but he just didn't live up to that hype. I mean, I think after that, the only notable thing he really did after that was waving off Kobe for a three at the end of the game, one of the seasons when the Lakers won like 17 games. Like, it's the only notable thing he's ever done. And then also that practice when Kobe was calling everyone soft like Charmin and he pointed right at Jeremy Lin. So those are the only two things that he's really done since. And I mean, again, he's been a good player, and he won a championship with the Raptors. I don't think he played I don't think he played in the finals. Like, I'm not trying to be mean. I saw
a YouTube video of Jeremy Lin's highlights from the championship series, and it literally was a 3-second video of him dribbling the ball.
In garbage time.
Okay. I was going to say, I wasn't sure if he played, but he did. It must have been less than like 5 minutes.
Yeah. No. He played three seconds left in the game, just dribbling the ball out. Like, that's literally his highlight.
That's so disrespectful.
But and he had a good you know, few games there in 2012. But other than that, he's just been kind of a mediocre player in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, Linsanity, there's the whole Linsanity documentary out, like, you know, which was a really good story, you know, if, you know, for those of you maybe not NBA fans, yeah, I mean, him, Harvard. You know, a Harvard graduate, ended up sleeping on the couch of one of his teammates, like, just...
Landry, right?
It was...
on the Knicks. He slept on his couch not knowing if he was going to make the team.
Yeah, what's his name?
What's his first name?
I can't even think. Not Carl Landry. Landry Fields.
Landry Fields.
There we go. Carl Landry. No. Yeah, I don't think he was in the league anymore. He might have still been in the league, but he might have still been in the league.
I couldn't think of anybody else to talk about.
I know you're talking about Landry Fields.
I just have an opportunity to have a good time here.
That was a crazy story.
But yeah, he was sleeping on Landry Fields' couch. Like, he, you know, and then. He just went off, and this was Melo was injured, right?
Yeah.
So Melo was injured, so that's what really gave him.
It wasn't just Melo. I mean, there was multiple injuries to the team that at that point.
Was Shumpert still injured? Or was Shumpert playing with?
I don't remember exactly that moment, but I knew there were multiple injuries, and it was kind of just like, well, all right, we're gonna bring this dude in for at that time it was the D League, now the G League.
Yeah,
and it was like, let's bring this dude in, and you know,
yeah,
you know, just let him play a little bit, and we. You know, might as well. And at that point, you know, there weren't too many. I don't know if there were. If anything, there weren't that many Asian-American basketball players at that time.
Well, that played that position, too.
Especially that position, yeah. Because at that point, I think in 2012, Yao was still in the league.
Maybe, yeah. Because you have.
I think he went to the Hall of Fame in 2018 and 4 years after. So I think he still was in the league. But at that point, yeah, playing. A guard position. There
yeah,
were no Asian Americans.
You didn't have a lot of Asian Americans playing the guard position. Yeah, because like you said, Yao Ming and other guys like Yi Jian Liang or something like that. You know, but that was a crazy story. Like you said, international superstar because he got China to support him because he's from Taiwan, I think, but which is like pretty much China. It's the Republic of China, and so. But anyways, he got China support even like when he went to Houston. Like he was for like I think up until a week or two before the selections, like he was going to be an all-star starter.
Yeah,
you know, based off of the votes. Like so, Linsanity was huge, and we still like his name is we still recognize the name, and he's still somewhat popular, if you will.
And he got his chip.
And he got
his chip dollar.
He got
chip,
the
championship and, money.
And he got the money. Yeah. So
he's got a big contract with Houston.
Yeah. Houston gave him a lot of money. But still, I mean, I think the fact that like people still kind of were holding out hope that he would still be a good point guard, you know, with the Lakers and the Hornets and, you know, I think Atlanta too. I think like
the Hornets.
Yeah. Like teams were still giving him a chance in the NBA.
Raptors,
like
yeah.
That was huge.
It's
like,
just funny when
who would have thought a month stretch of good basketball would get you a full career?
Yeah. It's so funny thinking about Jeremy Lin because when you look at him play, like, you know, when you watch NBA athletes, like, you know, I watch NBA athletes and obviously I'm not saying I'm as athletic as Jeremy Lin. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But typically when you watch an NBA athlete, you look at them and say like, wow, I can't do that. You know, and then I watch Jeremy Lin shoot. And I'm like, we have the same jump shot.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it was, but like the way he attacks the basket and the way, you know, he shoots again, no one playing pickup. I'm not trying to compare and saying they're as good. I'm saying the eye test. He looks as if, oh, that's something that I can do. Like I can do that on the court. He's not flashy. There's no like signs of like, wow, like I can't believe he had that sweet cross. It was just like those 12 games or whatever it was just like he was just hustling and just
yeah. And I think it was the swagger about him too.
Yeah.
What got people on board. But yeah, Linsanity.
Yeah, his hype was real for sure. You guys see he's actually trying to make an NBA comeback.
Yes, because he was in China for 2 years, I think.
Yeah,
playing for the
Beijing Ducks.
The Ducks, yeah, he was playing for the Ducks for 2 years.
For the last year or so. And yeah, I saw that he posted like this big Instagram post that he knows that he's supposed to be in the NBA and he's going to.
Yeah, he's been playing over here with Jordan Lawley and stuff like that and doing some runs with him. So
be interesting to see. All right, T, you're up. Who you got?
So this one, near and dear to my heart, you know, my biggest, one of my biggest one-hit wonders is Tim Tebow. Mm. Now, I'm repping, you guys see here, I'm repping the Broncos. Diehard Broncos fan, near and dear to my heart. So we drafted Tim Tebow. You know, we took him, oh man, I'm forgetting, like 22, I think, or Dan, you want to fact check that for me? I think we took him 22nd in the draft. And I was like, all right, you know, whatever. Like he's probably the best college.
25th.
Okay. So we took him 25th. He's the best college football player of all time. Probably. I mean, he's at least a top five college football player of all
top
time.
Top five.
Yeah. At least top
I'd
five.
Say Reggie Bush.
Yeah. Okay. He's gonna Reggie Bush.
Anyways.
All
right.
But,
continue.
But I would say he's one of the best college football players of all time. So when, you know, Denver drafted Tim Tebow, I mean, everybody, you look at all the mock drafts, all of the, everyone's saying, oh, this guy should play halfback. He should play H-back. He should play tight end. Like he's not a quarterback. He's not going to play quarterback in the NFL. It's Denver drafts him. I'm like, okay, sweet. We got this quarterback. Like, we're excited about him. And, you know, our quarterback at the time, but before, you know, Tim Tebow's dubbing, we had Kyle Orton, who the year before started off the season 6-0. We had, you know, Josh McDaniels was the head coach, and we were rolling, and then literally went 2-8 the rest of the season. And, you know, they were like, just, you know, threw in Tim Tebow in the last couple games just to see how he did in against the Houston Texans when he first played. Like, all right, this guy looks good. And then we started off the next season, went back to Kyle Orton. He struggled, and then the bye week came, and we put in Tim Tebow to start against the Miami Dolphins.
And that was on his side.
And that was the beginning of Tebow time. You guys remember, like, Tebow time? Like, we talk about Linsanity. You got Tebow time. Obviously, the kneeling, you know, the prayer. He made kneeling cool, I guess. You know, there was, you know, obviously, for me as a Bronco fan, he was very frustrating to watch for three quarters of the game. Like, he would miss the easiest passes. He couldn't throw the ball. I mean, obviously, his game was running the ball. We started Tim Tebow at the bye week, and then from then to the rest of the season had the number one rushing attack for the rest of the season. You know, you guys like Knowshon Moreno, Willis McGahee in the backfield. Like, you know, we had a bomb rushing attack. And then Tim Tebow time, I mean, it was everywhere. Everybody was jumping on board. I think the Broncos ended up getting rated like the most popular team in the NFL, like the next, going to the next season. Like, there was that on I forget the name of the DJ guy or whatever, DJ something, whatever, but he made that whole mixtape. You remember that whole, like, he used Skip Bayless and, like, made that whole mixtape. Like, he's a gamer, he's a baller, he's a player. I got Tebow, whatever. It was like the whole team, all he does is win. All he does is win. Yeah, the whole thing, like he literally took the NBA by storm. They had skits of him on SNL, like he or the NFL, sorry, by storm. And then
his other sport is the MLB.
The MLB is his other sport. That's right. But that playoff game against the Steelers, that for me, I probably watch that game probably three times a year and rewatch it. I mean, again, like I said, I bleed blue and orange. I go back and watch old games.
That was the overtime game, right?
That was the overtime game. Yeah. So I watch games. I watch the Broncos games as much as I can. I haven't missed a game since I was like 14. But that game, we were coming into it. Obviously, the Steelers were like, you know, they were going to beat us. The Steelers were Super Bowl contenders. Like, they were going to beat the Broncos going to that game. And that game was played at home in Mile High, and Tim Tebow went off that game. Like, he threw for 316 yards, threw for a couple touchdowns. Like, he was balling, and then obviously the game-winning touchdown. So this was the first year of the new overtime playoff rules. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, whatever, if a team scores a field goal, the other team gets a shot to, you know, gets a shot to come back and score, right? Then rules, the current rules that are in today, like, but this was only for the playoffs they were doing this. And so I remember exactly where I was. I was at home. All my family were all watching the game, and I do not like watching the game with people. But I had my lucky blanket on. I still have it to this day. I've had it since I was 12 years old. I literally watch almost every Broncos game with that blanket on.
Every time I've ever been anywhere, you always have that blanket at your house.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
I've had it since I was 12. Okay. Yeah. It's in good shape.
Yeah, we've been roommates.
It's in good shape.
Has he ever used another blanket?
No, that's the only blanket he's ever used.
I'm telling you guys.
Taking that thing camping with me? Yep.
Everywhere. Hotels everywhere. I've had it since I was 12. So, but I had that blanket on, and I'm watching the game, and my older brother, he was asking me, he's like, so how do the playoff rules work? How does the overtime work or whatever? And I was literally in the middle of explaining to him. I was like, oh, if we score a touchdown, oh, and Tim Tebow gets the ball. He throws it to Demaryius Thomas. He breaks free, gives a stiff arm and takes off. The Broncos score a touchdown. We win, game over. Like, Tebow time.
It was a great game.
Tebow time was insane. But again, it all came to an end the next season. The Broncos signed Peyton Manning. And ended up trading Tim Tebow to the Jets, and where he had to play backup to Mark Sanchez, barely got really any playing time. They did a couple Wildcat packages, and then he went to the
Patriots,
then played with the Eagles for a little bit, and then just kind of fell out of the NFL. But he's a guy, he probably should have gotten a second crack at being a starter in the NFL. I think the Jets did him dirty because they Rex Ryan told him like he's gonna play and like he's gonna get, you know, PT or whatever. He had a shot to start. That's really the only reason why he was like, I'm down with this trade. Not to say like he had a ton of leverage, but he was okay with the trade.
I think John Elway wanted to respect him though. You know, yeah, because you know he had won them.
A division, won a playoff. So like he definitely wanted to do right by Tim Tebow, but yeah.
Definitely a one-hit wonder.
Definitely
a
big one-hit wonder.
For sure. All right. Next one here I'm going with. Are we going to do three each?
Yeah.
I'm going to roll with three each. All right. Next one I'm rolling here. Dallas Braden. Not a lot of people may remember Dallas Braden, so let me refresh your memory. Pitcher for the Oakland Athletics, the Oakland A's, on Sunday, May 9th, 2010. Dallas Braden pitched a perfect game, and I remember seeing this on SportsCenter. I'm not gonna try to lie on here and say I watched an A's game. Okay, no one watches an A's game unless you are an absolute diehard fan of the A's. But pitched a perfect. We don't need to go any further from there.
You said die, and I was like, oh yeah, Oakland.
He pitched a perfect game against the Tampa Bay Rays. Retired all 27 batters. I mean, just. Unbelievable. The number, I forget, Dalen, if you want to check how many times a perfect game has been pitched in Major League history. I don't want to say a number because I feel like I'm going to be off, but I know it's definitely not a lot. It hasn't happened a lot. And really after that day, after that time, I mean, he had a decent end to the season, but he was just kind of really, again, just really mediocre. He had some serious shoulder injuries. That didn't allow him to really continue on in his career. Didn't really have a successful career. I think he is probably in baseball's eyes, at least the number one guy I can think of that says that guy was just. I mean, he had that extreme high, and then after that, just really plateaued.
Right, in 150 years of Major League Baseball history, and over 218,000. Games played, there have only been 23 official perfect games.
23. I mean, so he did something that only 20, and he's not a Hall of Fame pitcher. He was not an all-star, not a franchise pitcher. He was a good pitcher that year and had a great, an all-time great game, but didn't really have that success after everything. And he definitely, in the eyes of baseball fans, if you're a real baseball fan and you can remember this moment, you remember how crazy it was that a guy like this did this. and to not live up to that continued hype. He definitely is a huge one and done player in professional sports.
Yeah, I just remember that game itself was just there was so much. I think there was like a moment there with him and his dad. Like there was just a lot of cool things with that with that game, and it was all over ESPN and SportsCenter and all different sports news outlets. Like it was just it was such a big deal. But then, the big fall to obscurity. So. But yeah, he's another one hit wonder.
I think I just looked it up. That was he pitched that perfect game on Mother's Day, and I believe his mom was there. And I think the moment after the game was
his mom. That's was what it was. His mom.
And that's kind of what viral was. That's oh, he pitched a perfect game. You know, it was a gift to his mom, kind of a thing. So that was kind of cool. Put the cherry on top for that.
Yeah, that is cool. But definitely a one hit wonder.
Yeah. So I got another one hit wonder for you, Rye.
I'm here.
You ready for this guy? Another guy who started his career with the Denver Broncos. I'm going to go with running back Peyton Hillis. Mm-hmm. So this guy, obviously, you know, started with the Broncos.
Is he your had, third one also going to be a Bronco?
He's not going to be a Bronco.
Got it.
but Peyton Hillis, he's another guy who took the league by storm. Started with the Broncos, had some injuries, a hamstring injury. You know, but he was a good running back for the Broncos, and then went to the Cleveland Browns. This was a part of the trade that sent, I think this was Brady Quinn ended up coming over to the Broncos. He was a quarterback with the Browns, and there's a big old trade with Denver and Cleveland. And so Peyton Hillis ended up going over to the Browns and balled out in the 2010 season. So this guy who coming off of a concussion, coming off of really just getting really tossed away, a toss in piece really for Denver, he comes in the next season with the Cleveland Browns and rushes for 1,177 rushing yards. He's got 11 touchdowns on 270 carries, like, and, you know, a Pro Bowl. And the biggest thing, he was on the cover of Madden. Like he was obviously the next big running back, and again he's rushing along the same.
Was he the start of the Madden curse?
Oh no! You had guys before that. You had Steve McNair and Michael Vick, all these other guys who were.
But it is real.
Terrell Davis. It's definitely real. Madden curse is real.
Lamar Jackson,
I think just statistically, I guess. But anyways, Peyton Hillis was on the cover of Madden. And, you know, he's, again, a lot of the other top running backs at the time. You got Chris Johnson with the Titans, Adrian Peterson, Arian Foster, Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, those are some of the other guys who were balling out in the NFL, running backs who were balling out in the NFL at the time, especially that year. And so this was like, you know, a coming up on a contract year for him too. The next season, he obviously wanted his money. Like, I had a Pro Bowl season, Madden cover, 11 touchdowns, 1,000-yard rusher. He went off the next season with the Cleveland Browns. They were hesitant to give him the big contract. Obviously there was talks of him, like his maturity, like his durability as well, like him just being able to, you know, stay healthy, because obviously he had those 2 years in Denver where he was injured. Mm-hmm. He didn't even start every game for the Browns that year too. So they were like, we're not sure if we're going to give you this contract. They gave him like this prove it year, and he fell off. He ended up rushing for 3 touchdowns the next year, only rushed for 587 yards the next season. And then they were like, nah, bro, you're out. And, yeah, so he ended up going to the Chiefs, and then ended up going to the Giants, and then just career fizzled out, and only played 7 years in the league. So he definitely was a huge one hit wonder. Yeah. But again, the Madden cover was the thing for me. If you played Madden 2011,
no, I think he fell victim to the Cleveland curse.
The Cleveland curse.
Come on, he had
the Madden curse and the Cleveland curse.
Yeah, I think it was more so the Cleveland curse. I don't know, but it's funny because I saw a meme and it said, from cover boy to game over. And it's like, yikes.
Ooh, yeah,
that one cuts deep for him. But I mean,
Yeah, that's true. Like
this conversation is almost depressing. Like I feel bad.
You
like,
feel bad for these guys.
All these guys.
Like they were surprised. Huge. I'm surprised Madden even put him on the cover just because the aesthetic of brown and orange on like the front of the game. Yeah, like, I mean, come on.
I think it was that. I don't know if that was the first year they started doing like fan votes and stuff like that, or maybe it was a couple years later. But yeah, maybe they were like, we gotta let the fans decide now. If we're like. Because to the aesthetic, and two, Peyton Hillis was like he definitely had a bomb year, but he wasn't even like the rushing leader. Like I think Arian Foster was led the league in rushes that year. You still had guys like Adrian Peterson, who I think ended up getting on the Madden cover in 2012. I think so.
It's almost like Madden should have been smarter with making sure that these guys are more proven. I mean, even with Lamar was the MVP, like great season, but I mean, to base giving them that off of 1 year, you know what I mean? I feel like a little bit more needs to go
into
that.
We almost have to do like an episode and dig deep in what goes into Madden in them choosing to two, like
for sure.
Obviously Lamar Jackson's probably the big, the hot name in the league,
I do get it. Like I understand it, but.
But Peyton Hillis is one that's like, he wasn't even MVP. Like he had a really good season, but like, come on. Like he should have been
smarter with that for sure. But
jump the gun on that one.
Yeah.
Definitely a one hit wonder.
All right. Right.
No question. All right. My last one here, I'm going to go with Buster Douglas, underdog going into the 1990 fight against Tyson. Who was undefeated and considered to be the best boxer in the world, obviously. Tyson obviously had been consistently dominating and defying all odds, all expectations. He knocked out Tyson in the 10th round to claim the WBC and the WA titles, and he reigned as the world heavyweight champion for only 8 months. And after after fighting Tyson, he fought Evander Holyfield in the next title defense and lost it. And after that, he never regained his title again. He had it for 8 months and lost it. He was a good fighter, but no one in their right mind was picking Douglas to win this fight. I mean, I wasn't alive in 1990, but just everything you've read and everything you hear about this story, it's such an amazing kind of underdog story too, a real David and Goliath story. I mean, Tyson is and I think this is a side note, but that's why people love boxing so much.
Yeah.
One punch can change everything,
the whole fight,
And that's why there's, that's why people love sports in general, but just in boxing, like literally one punch can change everything. And no one expected Tyson to lose this fight. And so when that happened, obviously he's got this title, loses it to Evander Holyfield. That's another legend you lost it to. Like, that's not the end of the world to lose that to him. But then his career just fizzled out so quickly after that. And he went from this literally the highest peak of beating, some would say the best one, not the best Muhammad Ali, but the top, one of the top three boxers ever.
Yeah.
Top five boxers ever. And, to beat him and to be on this high and then to take that fall just so quickly and, to just fizzle really out. He definitely is a one hit wonder.
Yeah. He's another one. I kind of forgot about, who was a big name. Who's still somewhat of a big name and a recognizable name.
Because of that,
fight with Tyson.
And again, he some of these guys, I mean, it's not like they're terrible. Like we mentioned, Jeremy Lin, still started. Like, it's not like his boxing career was over, after his next fight with Evander Holyfield, but it was, he had this one peak moment and he never reached that pinnacle again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you on that one. He's another good one. All right. Here's my last one. Going to the NBA. He's another guy that, as you just mentioned, like who reached this pinnacle, reached this height, and then just could never get back to. And I really feel bad for him. That's Isaiah Thomas. And not the Pistons Isaiah Thomas. This is the Celtics Isaiah Thomas.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Which I think he was named after. After losing, his dad lost a bet, I think. I had to name him that. But Isaiah Thomas, so drafted. He was the last pick in the draft by the Kings out of Washington. And you know, he was playing pretty well, played pretty decent with the Kings, and then you know, was playing with the Phoenix Suns, and then ends up getting traded to the Boston Celtics. And he had a good, you know, had a good little stretch there with the Celtics the year before when he got there. He averaged 22 a game. And then he had his last season with the Boston Celtics, he had the MVP caliber season. Mm-hmm. He didn't win MVP, he was finished fifth in the MVP voting. But he was averaging 28.9 points a game, pretty much 29 points a game. He was averaging 6 assists a game, about 1 steal a game. Like he was balling. This dude was a bucket. I mean, Dalen can obviously attest to it. He was watching it. That was big. IT time. Fourth quarter was IT time. He was like, you know, Dalen would never shut up about Isaiah Thomas. He'd always talk about him. But he was just I liked watching him. Obviously, me being not tall either. Isaiah, I mean, he's still taller than me, but
and a lefty.
Yeah, and a lefty. So he was definitely so
extremely fun. Entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, so fun to watch. Like just watching him on the court, he could get a bucket anywhere. Anywhere he went. Like, and again, he's another guy who took the league by storm. And I don't know. I think it's just something about like the guards. Like fans, I think really can get behind like guards. I think just whether it's their size, they're like they're not too tall. Like they're not like.
Yeah,
you know, the 7 footer, the 6'11" guy, where it's like, oh, I like
James
him.
James Harden says, "I wish I could just dribble to the basket
and just dunk it every time." Exactly. So it's just
which
like
there's some truth to that.
Yeah, but then you know he had that MVP caliber season, and he was due for that contract extension. If you remember, like he was supposed to get that huge contract. He said, he's being interviewed. They were like, you know, what do you think about you know your contract extension? He was like, it's my time. And they better back up the Brinks truck. I'm gonna make a lot of money. And he was set to get a huge contract with the Celtics. And then the Celtics did him a little dirty. They Celtics, which is understandable. I even feel bad because the Celtics had just signed Gordon Hayward to that summer, and Isaiah Thomas called Gordon Hayward and was like, "Yo, we're about to make a run. Like we got Gordon Hayward. Like." This is our time. We're about to win a championship. We got these young draft picks. Like, we're all right. The Celtics are here. Like, we're gonna win a championship. We're gonna make a run in a championship. And even then, like they could have made a run. I think they made it. They made somewhat of a deep run. I think that year. I think maybe they lost in the second round.
No, they lost in the conference finals.
Yeah, conference finals.
Because Kyrie ended up being out, yep. And Hayward ended up being out, and they lost to LeBron in Game 7.
Game 7.
That's right.
Tatum dunked on LeBron in
Game
7.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. So they lost in the conference finals, so had a legit chance to make the finals, and they were like, he was super hyped about it, and then they traded him for Kyrie Irving, send him over to Cleveland. And then, obviously, you know, everything has come out now. Like he had the hip injury, and that's really where Boston was, like, not willing to go that route. He obviously had the surgery. He was out for Cleveland, you know, didn't come back, I think, until January or something like that, or February.
After the All-Star break, yeah.
Yeah, he came back with the Cavs, and then he's just been on this mission now.
And
he
got
like,
traded that year.
Yeah.
Got traded to the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that was Larry Nance. That whole deal.
That was a trade for LeBron.
Yeah.
And then he was with the Lakers that year. And then he, went to
the Nuggets.
Nuggets. And then he went to Washington. Mm-hmm. And now who knows? I mean, I don't know if he'll be in the league.
He's just been trying to bounce back. I think he's a guy who's trying to get back to getting that money. Yeah, like trying to get to that level because he was supposed to get that max contract, but. He's another one that just plummeted. Sorry to bring up the old wounds, Dalen.
It's all right. I liked him. I really did. I mean, he just like you were saying, he was just fun to watch. I mean, I just remember watching him during that year, and it was like how he's 5'8", maybe 5'9" on a good day, and he's able to take it into the lane and
yep.
score on these
so impressive. Seven.
Like, it just was awesome. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I know we have talked to you guys about it too. You know, with the hip injury and who we were going for and Kyrie Irving at the time, it just made sense. Why are we going to pay him, you know, big money when Kyrie Irving's out there? We can chase him. He's injured, you know, with his hip, IT's hip. It was just like, it was too much. I agree, though. Boston did do him a little dirty. Danny Ainge did tell him a lot of things that, you know, he didn't,
yeah,
didn't come through on. So it hurts a little bit looking back on it, but I mean, it is what it is. I wish IT the best. He did, you know, make it a fun time while, you know,
every year there's rumors of him coming back to Boston every single year.
Yeah. Him and Danny Ainge, I don't think they're tight like that anymore to where he would come back. No, and especially with Kemba there now, it's just, there's no need. I mean, IT wouldn't even play.
I don't see him being a starter in the NBA anytime soon. I mean,
no.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he didn't even start for the Wizards really, and John Wall was out. Like, I don't see him starting. Yeah. But
yeah,
definitely why he's on T's list. But, yeah.
There we go.
And speaking of lists,
it's that time.
It's that time. Dalen, what time is it?
It is time for top five.
Top five. Top five.
This episode, we are going with Rye. All right, Rye, you ready for this?
Ready.
Give me your top five World Series series.
World Series series.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start off with my number one.
Ooh.
Okay. My number one World Series win is the 2020 World Series champions, the Los Angeles Dodgers, hey, over the Tampa Bay Rays.
Let's go.
In six games. Let's go, baby.
Let's go.
Dodger, cue the music. All I do is win, oh, okay, win, win, no matter what.
We have two different songs.
Sorry, we didn't get that before. I love LA. Sorry, should have gone with that too. My bad.
Like, wow, that's our anthem.
I know. I was just excited though because I played
after every Dodgers game.
I know. I just got excited.
Oh man!
Yeah. Great number one. Great number one.
That was my number one. Okay, now, but now, I'm gonna be unbiased and I'm gonna go with the, you know, as a fan, the as others. A Dodger fan, that was mine. But I'm going to put the Dodgers aside. Let's just say
gotcha.
That. Other than the Dodgers.
Right,
that way
okay.
I have to put them on the list. Alrighty. I don't want to have
fair,
to
fair enough.
All right, so we'll go to number five here. We'll go to number five. Number five, I'm going 2011. I'm going to preface this too. This is, I'm going to do all my lifetime.
Okay.
So just my lifetime, 1993 to present. Okay. I wanted to preface that beforehand because I tried to do a lot of reading up and there are so many like World Series that were like so long ago that were like, oh, that seemed really cool. But I was like, I don't know how to judge all of this because I really don't know anything about it. So I'm going to roll with in my lifetime. And actually, most of these are in my lifetime where I became like a really big sports fan. So they're all in the 2000s. So I'm going to say in the 2000s here. Number five, 2011, the Cardinals over the Rangers in seven games. Albert Pujols doubling in the ninth. He had three home runs. That World Series only had been accomplished by three other players before him. Reggie Jackson, Babe Ruth, and Pablo Sandoval. Only three guys had done that. Cardinals won the game in the 11th inning in game six. And they were down two runs in the ninth inning. I mean, it was just erase that two-run deficit going into extra innings, all of that. It was a fantastic game, a walk-off home run by David Fries in the 11th inning. Blowout game three, Albert Pujols. He hit those three home runs in that game, not in the series. I'm sorry, in that game.
Yeah.
Unbelievable game. I mean, it was amazing. That series was just unbelievable in general, and I think it deserves a spot on the top five, the 2011 World Series Cardinals over the Rangers. The Rangers were one pitch away from a World Series and lost it all. One pitch away, and that's happened a couple times. We're going to read about that here. We're going to hear about a few of those in a little bit. Next one, I hate to say this one, and it does not bring me any joy to say this, but no. I have to be unbiased, completely unbiased.
I know where this is going.
2015 Giants over the Royals in seven games. Being completely unbiased, this was one of the, probably if not the greatest pitching performance in World Series history. Madison Bumgarner was named the 2014 World Series MVP, finishing the series with a 2-0 record and a .43 ERA in three pitching appearances. came in to close the game out in the seventh game. Bumgarner gave up one run in 21 World Series innings, pitched 52 and two-thirds total innings in that entire postseason, was just a beast. And for that reason, pretty much for his performance, just his performance in general, I had to put that on my list. It was an unbelievable performance by a player. He deserved the MVP that season, no question. He willed his team to win. To me, in the 2000s, only two times have a pitcher or pitchers really dictated a game, completely dictated a series. Now, they're all extremely valuable. We understand that. And,
yeah.
And we'll talk about this. I'm going to talk about this here in a minute. You know, it's extremely valuable. Pitching, obviously, I think is the most important position. But he willed his team that World Series, in my personal opinion, Madison Bumgarner. So they got to be on my list, number four. Number three, I'm going 2002 Angels over the Giants in seven games. The Angels being a wild card that year, only one World Series championship has had a lower chance of winning the world in World Series history. Only one World Series has a team had a lower chance of winning the series and winning than the Angels did. There was no one expected them to win. What they had to do late in game six, Spezio hitting that home run to right field, that team with Troy Gloss, with Tim Salmon, John Lackey, a rookie pitching game seven, just an unbelievable World Series. So fun to watch. I remember my family, I'm a diehard Dodgers fan. My family's Angels fans. And I remember watching that series, you know, Barry Bonds, everyone, you know, the Giants were completely favored. And to see the Angels come out, win game six, win that closeout game, and then win game seven, just an unbelievable performance by them. They're number three on my list. Number two, I'm going with the Cubs over the Indians in seven games. Over 108 years drought for not winning the World Series. And the Indians, I think, after losing that, now hold the record for the long, they're now mm-hmm. the longest drought. I don't know exactly how many years it's been, but that both of those teams wanting it so bad, and the Cubs finally getting over the hump the year before, they weren't able to. Obviously, I was disappointed they beat our Dodgers, you know, that year. Yep. But winning the World Series, just amazing to see that city and just their fan base and everything like that finally get a championship. They got to be number two. And number one, for me, the top World Series in my lifetime, the 2001 World Series Diamondbacks over the Yankees in seven games. I can replay all of these moments. I can replay Craig Counsell coming up and getting hit by a pitch. Mariano Rivera hit him, bases loaded. Luis Gonzalez coming up, that lefty hit a blooper right over short, right to center. And man, Mariano Rivera coming in, and it pretty much at that time, if Mariano Rivera was coming in the game, it was over. The game was done. The series was over. And to see him come in, and they had a lead in the ninth inning, coming to the ninth inning, and seeing them lose that game, and the Diamondbacks doing something that was just unbelievable. And what I was referencing before, in my opinion, pitching was the most valuable thing in that series, no question. Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling each won two games in that World Series. Both of them won two games. You only need four games, so two pitchers literally won them the series. Extremely valuable. That was an amazing series to watch. I remember watching Game 7 with my family, and just seeing that, I used to love. I was a Dodgers fan, but as a young kid, I didn't really understand rivalries, and I really liked Craig Counsell because he had that really, if you remember, that really weird stance at the plate, and his bat would be like up here in the air, and he'd swing it back and forth. And as a kid, I used to play the MLB baseball game on my PlayStation 1, and I used to love playing with Craig Counsell because he would like swing that bat.
Kevin Youkilis too on the Red Sox.
Like he's got that weird stance too. But Luis Gonzalez, all those guys, man, that was a fun series. And so to me, that's the number one World Series. But as a Dodger fan, I got to say the 2020 World Series victory by the Dodge show.
I like your list. I would have switched 2-1 the Cubs winning the World Series was
cool because of the drought, but
yeah, that's I mean,
but that series, like,
but them coming back from 3-1,
yeah, bro. But that game seven was unbelievable. Diamondbacks Yankees,
yeah.
It's a pretty good list. We can agree to disagree. Cool. All right. Well, let's jump into this last segment, and let's go. You already know what time it is, and it is heart over head. No facts, no stats, no information.
Nothing.
Speak from the heart.
Let's go.
Rye, you alluded to the Dodgers, Yankees, I mean the Diamondbacks.
Yep.
Championship. It was in your top five.
Yep.
Our heart over head kind of has to do with something with that, as far as pitching is the most important key to winning a championship. You had mentioned that the Diamondbacks used two pitchers to technically, I mean, in reality, win them that series.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you guys, or let you guys know, pitching is the most important key to winning a championship. Yes or no? Kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, this, to me, it's pretty simple. Yes. I mean, it's definitely the most important aspect of the game of baseball to win a championship. I mean, just as, you know, you would ask the question in any sport, you know, in basketball, what's more important, offense or defense? You know, obviously both are important. You can't play the game without either of them. But to me, pitching is the most important piece to baseball. You rely so much on the pitchers. When you talk of the greatest players in baseball history, you know, you go back and forth with who they are, and everyone loves the flashy, the home runs and the records and all of this. But when you really break it down and when you really look at the game of baseball, pitchers are so much more valuable than every other position. Think about the weight that is put on a pitcher's shoulder. You, in a World Series as a pitcher, you cannot have a bad game. You can't. As a hitter, you can have a bad game and you're going to bounce back because you don't play game one, you're playing game two. But as a pitcher, especially if you're a starting pitcher, you're getting two starts in a World Series max. And you have to perform. The pressure that is put on these pitchers, because you have to perform in those two games. And yeah, those games in between, you get rest and you get a breather there. But those times, you have no option but to perform. Batter can come up and he can come up and have a plate appearance and he can strike out and he's got another opportunity. But as a pitcher, if you got two or three guys on base and you give up a home run, the entire game could be over because you now have no option but to rely on your team to give you run support. You can't do anything about that. I mean, a pitcher can get a home run if you're playing, you know, if the NL and we're not using designated hitters, but that's not going to happen. You rely on your team to do that. And so the weight on these pitchers is absolutely extreme. You can't have a bad inning. You can't have a bad game because you can jeopardize the entire World Series. We look at the Dodgers when we lost World Series, when your best pitcher does not play to the best of his abilities, you will lose the World Series.
It's a really
the Astros cheated. Yes, they did. And you know, who knows what could have happened. You know, we can speculate back and forth. But Clayton Kershaw did not perform when it mattered most. We could have won Game 6. 98 times, Clayton Kershaw, when he has a three-run lead going into the fifth or the sixth inning, if he has a three-run lead, actually, I think at any inning, if at any point his team has a three-run lead, he was 96-2 if he has a three-run lead. In the playoffs, in the World Series, in Game 6, when we were up 3-2, he choked. And he didn't give us what we needed. And because he did not play and because he did not perform to what he was capable, I believe we lost the World Series. We can say the Astros did cheat. We can reference all of that. But as a pitcher, you cannot have a bad game. And there is so much pressure put on you for that. You can really make or break a championship run.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
Sorry, I got a little passionate there. I was sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, pitching is, you know, is important, but I think to me, you know, hitting is the most important, you know, aspect of winning the World Series. I mean, I think run support is more important than the pitching. I mean, you made a lot of good points there about, you know, you've got, you know, your one game or your one shot, all of it can end there. But then again, you can see games like, you know, even in this World Series with the Rays and the Dodgers, like you can, you know, your pitching can be strong, your pitching can, you know, be great, but then the pitcher slipped me, game six. For the Rays.
Tony Snell.
Snell, balling. Like he's killing it as a pitcher. But then obviously, you know, they're not creating that separation. They're not getting that run support. They're not getting, you know,
at that point when he got pulled out. That was the manager's flaw.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying is like they were in the lead, but they were only, it was 2-1, I think, or the score was 2-1 or 3-1.
We hadn't scored.
Yeah, so what was the score?
I think it was 1-0.
1-0. So, I mean, you have a pitcher who can, like...
Because we ended up winning 3-1.
Yeah, that's right. It scores 3-1. 3-1. So you have a pitcher who's killing, like, he's killing it, who's literally keeping this team back, but if you're not creating that run support and you're able to create that distance, that still gives that team that, you know, that puncher's chance or whatever, like, you keep the game close enough for them to have the shot to make that run, to capitalize on one, you know, one error, or you said the coach's flaw, like, just, you know, now you switch out the pitcher and then now it's game over, even though he has such a strong outing. So I think they're both important, but I think to me the run support, being able to create that gap and that distance, that separation, that allows your team to not have to take all, you know, take more risks as far as on the offensive side, or on the defensive side. So like to me the run support, the hitting is the most important aspect of winning the World Series.
I mean, we say defense wins championships, and you know, I think if we're gonna say that, we you know, in basketball, I think it goes the same way in baseball. And when you're on the defensive end, when you're fielding, the pitcher is the most valuable position at that time. No other position in baseball is more valuable than the pitcher. I mean, I think that's just facts. You rely on a pitcher, because when you're batting, you have nine guys and you have an opportunity for all nine of those guys to hopefully one of them or two of them or three of them will have a big night. With a pitcher, your starting pitcher, this is on you. I mean, we have some relief pitchers that we can bring in, but it is your job to at least get us 5-6 solid innings that you perform, that you come out and you give us some solid innings. Because if not, this thing could get done real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you on that. Like, again, I think there's the importance of that. But again, like you said, the nine guys. Like, on the flip side, if this pitcher is killing it, if this pitcher is like, yo guys, he's putting us in a position to win this game, like everybody else has got to step up, has got to, you know, obviously no pun intended, step up to the plate and start to give us run support and start to, you know, do your job to create that distance, like to give yourself, because again, we've also seen, you know, shootouts, I guess, in baseball too, where you have a little bit more higher scoring games too, but
if you look at the average World Series game, they are very low scoring typically.
Yeah,
extremely low scoring, and I believe that's because the pitchers take it to the next level during those times, and because,
but I think too, to that point, because they're so low scoring and the pitching ramps up the intensity, like you, as the, you know, for the run support, as the hit, for the hitting, like there, it has to be there. You can't just be mediocre at, like, you know, hitting. I mean, obviously you can't be mediocre either way, but like you can, I feel you can get away with it more being, you know, not having a great performance pitching, but if you're not performing well as far as hitting, if your bats just aren't there and you're not getting that run support, like you said, like I feel like the Rays game, you know, that can flip like that because you're just not being able to create that separation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see how. I mean, we can give. We can see so many times in World Series where there are so many low. There's neither team really giving run support, and it's a 1-0 victory. I mean, even the Dodgers game, I mean, it was a 3-1 victory. We didn't score till the sixth inning. I mean, it was we scored those two runs in the sixth, and then Mookie hit that home run in the ninth, and it was really. I mean, it was dead up until that point. I think we had one hit through five innings. And because the pitching was so strong, we were able to stay in that game because how valuable that is.
Yeah, but I see on the flip side, because the hitting wasn't really there, the bats weren't there for the Rays. Like, well, I felt like we had it. We were still in the game. Like, we had a shot. Like, we got it. We have a chance because they're not getting run. They're not getting that run support too. I mean, it's always tough too.
It's kind of one of those things. You can kind of see either way. I mean, cause you need both and you,
I think it's tough
for both, but I don't see how we put a higher value on batting than pitching.
I think this debate here is a little bit tough because it kind of goes both ways. Like, you could say, well, we were, you know, doing a poor job at batting, or he was doing a really good job of pitching.
We got to take this one to Instagram.
Yeah.
We got to take this one to Instagram.
Take it to the
Dave, gram. What do you think?
Sorry, T, but I'm going with Ryan on this one, in that pitching wins championships, and especially when it comes to the postseason. And here's why. Ryan did a very, very good job in explaining why he believes that, and just kind of piggybacking off what he said, but in a little bit of a different view. When it comes to the World Series and it comes to pitchers, you have your starting pitchers. There's so much pressure. There's so much, the light is on them. It's your time to go. Give us your best game possible. Give us your best game all year long. Like, you have to come to play. And when it comes to pitching, one bad pitch could result in a home run. One curveball that doesn't break, gone over the fence, changes the game. Now, if you look at for instance, the Rays Dodgers game, the Dodgers, I don't know. I think Snell maybe gave up two hits when he got pulled.
Yeah.
One hit through five innings and had eight strikeouts.
It was the second hit. That's why he got pulled. He had one hit up until that, and then the second hit he got pulled when Chris Taylor got
the
hit.
He, up until that point, there was no, the Dodgers were not hitting at all. They were struggling so hard and just no, they could not make any contact. He gave up that second hit and got pulled. As soon as he got pulled, the guy who replaced him gave up a run right away.
Immediately.
And that just goes to show you how, in that aspect right there, pitching is so important. If you would have left, I don't know how it would have played out, but I'm just assuming or seeing that the fact that Snell was just balling, if you would have left him in the game, I don't know if we would have even scored the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. Or until he got pulled.
And at that point, they would have when they went to their bullpen, if it would have been later on, they would have kept their because they were saving their aces for later.
Right, exactly.
They would have been able to use their aces later, and I think it would have been a different ball
game. And especially in baseball too, like, you want your pitching roster, you want your bullpen to be completely stacked. Like, you just think about even the Dodgers pitching rotation. You had, you know, all these guys who we could go to any except for Kenley Jansen. But all of our other pitchers were solid guys that could come out and just pitch lights out, get us out of the inning, come in and, you know, throw a couple strikes, get two outs, and end the inning. That's it. We're done. But, like, pitching in that aspect, especially in the World Series, I put a higher value on that than batting because, like I said, one wrong pitch could result in a double, a single, a run batted in, a home run. And that, you know, it's not rare in baseball to see 1-0 games. 2-0 games. And why is that? Because the pitching is so good. It only takes the Dodgers one home run and Kershaw to pitch six strong innings, our bullpen to come in, close it out. We win off one home run, 1-0. Yeah. So I think, especially in a World Series, I think your pitching is that much more valuable because batting, yes, I agree with you, T, batting is important. Both sides are important, but like having an ace come in and just give you six strong innings and you not score at all, and then your bullpen can close out the rest of the game and maybe give up one or two, but say you did have, you know, three runs, I think at that point you have to look at it like, yeah, we were okay batting. I mean, we had one home run and one RBI, but we pitched an exceptional game to where we shut them out, where they only scored one run. And now you look at, oh, we won 3-1. So I think when it comes to World Series championship games, pitching is the most important. And that's kind of where I stand kind of.
Since we've referenced a few Dodger games, I would just like to publicly on YouTube thank Kevin Cash for pulling out Tony Snell in the sixth inning. We greatly appreciate it.
He was the MVP of that series, definitely.
You're the real MVP. And thank you for that opportunity. Because I don't even know the guy's name who came in, but he had a passed ball immediately, run scored, and it was just... And then an infield hit where Mookie just...
even back to the point of obviously pitching being important, look at Kenley Jansen. Like, we go to him to close the game, like, hey bro, this is the only you only pitch one inning and you're in Major League Baseball and your one job is to get us three outs and close out the game. And like every time he was in, he was a liability.
Game,
and it was
game
like
four, game four he was a liability, but we also have to give the errors there.
Yes, but I mean, Kenley Jansen hasn't been the same Kenley Jansen that we're used to. You know what I mean? But it's just that this is that important that if your starting pitcher isn't going to pitch nine innings, you need someone to close out the game. And if you're going to have someone like Kenley who's not the same anymore and he's going to give up runs or he's going to, you know, make you lose the game, I mean, that's why
that's why he didn't play in game six.
Yeah, but that's my input. But I think, maybe we should take this to
I think we gotta take
Instagram.
It
to the streets.
Instagram. See what happens there and see what the people say, because that's what it's all about. It's the people. And so thank you for tuning in.
We're here for the people.
We're here for the
people. It's about you guys.
Yeah, let your voice be heard.
That's right. That's right. And so if you have any questions you want us to answer, you have any comments or, man, you're just like, I don't agree with what they said. That was stupid. That's okay. Let us know. Nah, I don't know about that. But seriously, we appreciate all you guys. Thank you for listening to another episode of Water Break. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for listening to another episode of Water Break. New episodes get released every Monday and Wednesday.
So be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you're listening to right now to be notified when a new episode is available. For more exclusive content, check us out on Instagram at Water Break Pod, or you can watch us on YouTube. Thanks for listening. Stay hydrated.